89.7 WRUC. Zach and Evan along with you for another fine week. It's the EZ Connection. And we're back on 89.7 WRUC, streaming live on the internet at www.wruc.union.edu. Check out the website. You can find information about the station there and stream it live from anywhere in the world as long as you have an internet connection. Right now, to my left, it's my partner, Evan, the sports maven here. And we're back. We're ready to get into some hockey discussion. And it's been an interesting week, interesting season so far for the New York area hockey teams. We're going New York City area first. And you have teams at the high end of the spectrum, the Rangers, and at the absolute lowest lowest part of the spectrum, the Islanders. And right in the middle is the New Jersey Devils, a middling team so far at best. They're 4-3 so far. You know, what's interesting to note about them, they're 3-0 away from their home, but only 1-3 at home. And usually this is a team that thrives at home. This is, you know, a team that has Martin Brodeur and, you know, shut down defense. But the problem so far with the Devils has certainly been their lack of scoring. And with the loss of Brian Gionta, it really hurts now that he's playing in Montreal. They still have legitimate scorers like Zach Parise, Kelly Zajac, Jamie Langenbrunner. Oh, did I say Kelly Zajac? Oh, okay. Well, Kelly Zajac plays here at Union. Maybe he will play in the NHL one day. But Travis Zajac. Their offense is not what it once was. I mean, Gionta was this little guy who could score a bunch of goals, and I think they're really dearly missing him right now.
Yeah, and New Jersey has always been a team that lets its good players go. But they've always, you know, just been great at coaching. They had Brodeur and just players stepping up. And, you know, they usually make a postseason run. At this point, I still, it's early in the season. They're not doing terribly, and I don't think they're out of the postseason discussion by any means.
It's been interesting though. The leader in goals, of course, is Travis Zajac with only 4, and you're followed by Parise and Jamie Langenbrunner, Rob Niedermeyer with 2, returning to the Devils. They really don't have many other players though. Obviously. It's easy to question the decision not to retain Brendan Shanahan. He's up there in age now, but he can still put 20 goals in the net. They have some good young defensemen, but it's I don't know if it's quite enough. They should sneak into the playoffs this year. Maybe more than sneak in. I think they'll
start out the season that well last year either, and then they stormed back, and I believe they either took the division or were close second at the very least. It was very surprising they did that without Brodeur for a good chunk of the year too. They still lost some parts over the off season. 8 points right now. I don't see them out of the race. I think that they're always they always find a way. I don't think they'll win the division this year, but eighth seed in the playoffs is not out of the question.
Oh no, and even above 5, maybe 6, if the guy between the pipes performs well, Martin Brodeur. He's had a couple shaky games, but then again, his next 2 shutouts will render him the all-time leader for career shutouts, passing Terry Sawchuk. So he just needs one more to tie Sawchuk's record. At the high end of the spectrum again is the New York Rangers. They've done very well so far, even 7-2. And this is the stat you like to see from the Rangers so far, compared to everybody else in the division, who nobody else in the division has cracked 30 goals for so far. The Rangers have 35-4, 22 against, and it's you have to always look at the guy backing it all up, Henrik Lundqvist. And this guy has been excellent.
Yeah, I mean, the Rangers have been having a good season so far. In fact, a great season. They're big. They just had a loss to the Sharks the other night. But besides that, I mean, they're playing the way that they wanted to play coming into the season. They brought in a lot of players. They're switching up their system, and they wanted to score a lot of points. That was we've said this before, but that was their problem last season. Is they had great defense, the best penalty killing unit in the league. They had Henrik Lundqvist at goal, but
which
they just
goalie is always your best penalty killer.
Yeah. Yeah. And but they couldn't get the puck in the net, and they tried to change that up, and right, it's 35 goals for. I mean, that's been very impressive so far.
Yeah, and you look at the team leaders in points. Marian Gaborik has been a revelation so far. 12 points. He has 6 goals already. Vinny Prospel really coming out of nowhere, notching 8 assists so far for a total of 11 points. He's had a great start to the season, the ex-Tampa Bay Lightning. But it's really great to look at this guy, Michael Delzato, the very young Rangers defenseman. He's averaging a point per game so far. And so obviously it's early yet, but this guy is a puck-moving defenseman. He has 2 goals and 5 assists already. I mean, obviously Rangers fans are going to be on the fast track to saying this guy is the next Brian Leetch. Well, I don't know if there'll ever be another Brian Leetch, but an offensive defenseman like this to complement more stay-at-home guys like Michael Roosevelt, it's scary to play the Rangers when they're clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah, and the big thing is, like you said, Gaborik has been fantastic for the Rangers so far. You know, it's only been 9 games, so we haven't seen if he could stay healthy for a whole season yet. But you know, he's been fantastic. But it's not just one player who's stepping up for this team. Like you said, Vinny Prospel, Chris Drury, they have a lot of players. A lot have scored goals. And it seems like a different player steps up each night.
Yeah, and this is one of the elite teams so far in the NHL. I mean, the only team that you could probably argue is better than them right now is their division mate, the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are at 7-1 instead of 7-2. But both teams obviously have 14 points. The Penguins don't have the prolific scoring as the Rangers do, but the Rangers won 7 in a row after dropping their first game of the season.
And they got better as the season went on. They started out the Pittsburgh game playing well, but you know, Pittsburgh just seemed to realize that they're going to get some odd man rushes against this aggressive unit, and they just thought, stay back, play defense. And then they kind of broke out against the Rangers and were able to keep it in the zone. You know, you had some questions. How is this team adapting to the new system? Are they being too aggressive? Are they compromising their defensive play? But then, you know, as the season went on, they got stronger.
Yeah, and the Rangers have looked very good so far this year. It's really hard to stress that enough. Obviously, they're reverting to the Rangers of a couple of years ago in signing the big names and you know, having not homegrown talent. At least in the forward department, you have Drury, who's been a hold over there, Gaborik, Higgins, Alex Kotelik, Vinny Prospel, are all new to the team. They've been contributing a lot. But you look at the defensemen, and all but one is a homegrown product, and that's Wade Redden, who they're always kind of looking to dump because of his rather large salary. But you look at Matt Gilroy and Michael Delzato so far, these two very young defensemen, and they've played very well.
Yeah, that has been a big part to this team. You know, you wanted to see how the defensemen would play too, and they got these two young guys, weren't really sure what they're going to get, but I mean, they played fantastic. Like you said, Delzato's been a great offensive defensive player, and he still has played well getting the puck out of the zone.
Yeah. Speaking of other young players, the New York Islanders have really invested a lot in their future in these young players, and John Tavares hasn't shown any signs of slowing down so far. Indeed, he's the team leader in points, sharing with Matt Molson, his line mate, with 7. He has 3 goals so far. Actually, I think one of the biggest surprises for the Islanders so far has been Matt Molson, guy they picked up from the Kings. He's always been sort of up and down in the minors. He's not going to be a superstar, but he's a very nice complement to Tavares on that top line with Kyle Okposo. In other news, Scott Gordon might move Okposo down a line and move Dougie Waite, who's now playing the wing and not centering, up to the first line. Trying to get more offense. Because you look at the Islanders' leaders in points, and you have Molson, Tavares, and Okposo with 7, 7, and 6, respectively, and that's it. That's their first line. Nobody else is scoring on this team, and that's part of the reason they're one of only two winless teams so far. They're 0-3-3. They only have 3 points, and all of a sudden, you know, you could say, well, you know, at least they haven't. They've lost 3 in overtime and played hard. But you look at the Rangers and the Penguins, and they're already at 14 points. And the Islanders, you can't like the 13 goals for. That's very, very lethargic. And 23 goals against isn't terrible. It leads the division, the Atlantic division. But, there's...
It's also they played the least amount of games.
Yeah, and it always happens this way, that the Islanders play less games than teams like the Rangers, so it's easy to get off to a rip-roaring start for the Rangers. The NHL always schedules it this way. But right now, neither goalie has been spectacular. Martin Biron and Dwayne Rolison have goals, save percent averages under 9, and that's not what you want to see from these two top-flight, potentially number one goalies who you signed in the offseason. Jeff Tambellini has not scored. The Islanders' patience has to be running thin with him. Blake Como isn't putting the puck in the net. And,
I really think that we've hit on the points for the Islanders right now. It's, you know, the problem is it's not one thing that's going to fix itself and they're going to start winning games.
Right.
You said they have one line that's scoring. Their goalies aren't playing that well. The defense isn't getting the puck out of the zone.
And I really think a big thing about this is it's just a lot of distraction off the ice with the whole debacle about the Lighthouse Project. The Islanders are trying to get a new stadium. They keep on getting shut down by the town of Hempstead. There's talk of them relocating. Obviously, everybody thinks Kansas City. There's actually a pretty good possibility they could end up in Long Island still, right back in Nassau. Or they could move in within Long Island. They could also move to Brooklyn or Queens to see how that works.
And like you said last week, you know, you'd hope a team with all these off the ice problems would hopefully be able to clear things up on the ice. It's, you know, when you're going through struggles like that, you want some type of good news. And like you mentioned with the Pittsburgh Penguins, you know, no one thought much of them. They had an old stadium too, and there's thoughts of them moving. And you know, they start winning, and now they're getting a new stadium. And you hope the same thing could happen with the Islanders. They're moving in the right direction. They have, like you said, some young stars that are playing pretty well right now, pretty promising.
Tavares and Okposo are definitely the real deal. They're waiting, of course, always on the health of Rick DiPietro. So far, it's been a little bit unnerving to watch Josh Bailey play. This kid's only 19. He might not be ready for the big time so far. And he was the number 9 overall draft pick last year, and it's not panning out quite yet. He can pass the puck. He has great vision on the ice, but he needs to work on that shot and put the puck in the net. But it's really ran the gamut here in the Atlantic Division for the Islanders, Devils, and Rangers. I mean, one team is surging, the other is middling, the other one is horrible. Along with the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are legitimately the worst team in the league with only 1 point so far. They're 0-6-1. And in such a hockey hotbed like Toronto, they're already calling for everybody's head. And that team hasn't been good in such a long time. It's really hard to believe. You know, they're in a rebuilding mode too, as are the Islanders. But they can't win. Neither team can win. So they're right down there at the bottom of the league.
What about the Hurricanes? they're having they're in the playoffs last year. Generally, a good team. Still have Stahl and 5 points right now.
Yeah, well, they've lost three in a row, and their scoring has been really anemic lately. I don't think it's time to jump ship quite yet for the Hurricanes, but you have to be concerned. I mean, this is a team that is expected to make the playoffs, and you can't spend that too much time in the cellar. The Canadiens aren't doing well. Neither are the Minnesota Wild. They're really feeling the loss of Marian Gaborik. The Minnesota Lightning aren't playing so well. Neither are the Panthers. Oh, did I say the Minnesota Lightning? Boy, oh boy, what is wrong with me today? The Tampa Bay Lightning. But for all the bad teams so far, there are some standouts. Surprisingly enough, the Avalanche, who finished, were one of the worst teams last year, are 6-1-1. You've got to like Craig Anderson, the young goalie there. Really, he's very athletic. He can really move around the net and has played very well for them. The surprising Coyotes are 5-2-0. They're playing with hustle. They're getting great defense. They can't really put the puck in the net much, but they're right up there with the elite team so far.
Yeah, and playing 7 games and only giving up 10 goals is phenomenal.
It is fantastic. And
the Sharks,
when
of
you
course.
Have when you have good defense, that's always the foundation of a strong team.
Yeah, you can't expect an offensive outburst all the time, kind of like what we were talking about with the Union hockey team last week. So to be able to have that steady defensive play generally helps you if you know how to win in a low-scoring game.
It's just like the old adage in baseball, pitching and defense wins championships. Once you get into more contention, then you can add scoring. But defense is really the bedrock everybody needs to be constructed on. And it's...
lose if you don't give up a goal.
Very true. This is what teams like the Wild, the Islanders, the Maple Leafs have to realize is just to grit it out. This might not be the season they make the playoffs, but rebuilding takes a while. Especially in the Islanders' case, I don't really know what the Maple Leafs are doing. They've waffled in between rebuilding and let's go for it. Let's sign everybody. Let's sign nobody. Let's trade. The franchise is a mess. They're trying to get back to their roots, though, and develop from within. But there's really not a lot of patience there. It's like a New York team, a baseball team, either the Mets or the Yankees. If they have a bad season, they're going to be tempted to go out and spend $500 million on A.J. Burnett. CC Sabathia. Yeah,
it's only been the Mets recently. I think most of my fans are used to losing seasons.
Yeah. That's very true. And with that, I think we're going to take a little break here on WRUC 89.7 FM and streaming live on the internet. Zach and Evan with you right now, and we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to 89.7 WRUC Union College. 89.7 WRUC and Cream on your radio at 89.7 FM and WRUC.union.edu. Zach and Evan back with you again on this fine Tuesday afternoon talking sports here on the EZ Connection. After profiling some hockey, we move into the lone sport that is in the middle of an intense playoff run right now, and that, of course, is baseball. Last night, two walk-off wins for two teams. And looking at the Phillies and Dodgers game first, with the Phillies grabbing a commanding 3-1 lead in that series, they look like they're the favorites to go to the World Series in this series for the NL.
3-1 is definitely a big advantage, but just remember a couple of years ago, the Red Sox were down, I believe, 3-1 to the Indians before they came roaring back, so nothing's done.
And of course they were down 3-0 to the Yankees,
right? So nothing's impossible, but at this point you have to say that the Phillies look like the better team. I mean, even when the Dodgers won their game, it was on a late inning rally, and even when they're able to get themselves back into these games, the Phillies just seem to have more and are they just always seem to be able to score runs, and they're getting surprisingly good pitching. I mean, Joe Blanton threw a pretty good game for them the other night.
Yeah, Cliff Lee was magnificent.
Pedro Martinez has been good in the postseason.
Yeah, and a good hitting from everybody in that lineup. Carlos Ruiz has been very good this postseason.
And it's been very clutch hitting, too. It's not just, you know, they're getting home runs with no one on base, you know, every few innings. It's, you know, when they need the runs, they're getting it. They're having rallies. And I think the biggest thing for this postseason was I was looking at the first game because, you know, Cole Hamels has been struggling this season. And he didn't play that well in the game he played against the Rockies. And, you know, with the way that Cliff Lee has been pitching, you thought if the Phillies could win that game with Cole Hamels on the mound, they'd have a good chance of taking this series. And it's an important game for both teams, and the Dodgers wound up losing that game. And
it didn't help the Dodgers starting. The starter, Hiroki Kuroda, was abysmal.
Yeah.
In that 11-0 loss. Chad Billingsley came in and stopped most of the bleeding, but it was way too late when the Phillies were already off to like a 6-0 lead. The Phillies have looked good, and the Dodgers really haven't been able to touch up their bullpen for much, which is their weakest point by far. You look at the offense, and they're just drubbing Dodgers pitching so far.
And it's not just that the Phillies have been hitting well, because, I mean, they had that 11-0 game, but besides that, they haven't had, you know, explosive offensive outings. It's more that they're getting good pitching, and, you know, the Dodgers are just not getting those clutch at-bats. You know, they have a good lineup. They were impressively able to play really well against Cardinal pitching, which seemed like the best rotation in the postseason. And here they just come up short. And like I said, like even when they manage to win the games or come back, they always, you just have this feeling that they're playing from behind, that they're trying their hardest just to get even with the Phillies.
Yeah, and it's sort of like a mental game they're playing. I think you know, all of a sudden they're down 3-1, and here's the defending world champs, and they look unbeatable. It's going to be a test. Definitely the next game for the Dodgers just to remain alive in the series. But the Phillies are one win away from back-to-back World Series appearances. And who would have guessed it? I really, in the first round, I picked the Phillies to fall to the Cardinals. I really thought the Cardinals had a superior team. But the Phillies...
Rockies.
Oh, the Rockies, I'm sorry. And I actually picked the Cardinals to beat the Dodgers. But, you know, These fighting Phils, as much as I hate to say it as a Mets fan, are playing with a lot of heart right now. And
the big thing is, you know, they do have a lot of stars on their team, but they still play as a team. That's a really big thing.
And Charlie Manuel said this is the best group of guys he's ever managed. Obviously, whenever you're in the playoffs, I'm sure your manager's going to say something like that, but... Still, not to be taken that lightly.
It seems like Brett Favre says that on every new
game
he's on.
Yeah, it's very true. It's the best group of guys I ever did play with. Ridiculous. But the switching over to the AL, the Yankees and the Angels, this has really just been which team can beat itself so far. The Angels have beat themselves twice. The Yankees have beat themselves once. And the Yankees have a 2-1 lead in the series. Joe Torre didn't make very good... Joe Girardi didn't make very good decisions last night. But C.C. Sabathia goes in Game 4 against Scott Kazmir, the old Yankees nemesis from his days in Tampa Bay.
But he's had a shaky season so far. And the big thing I've seen in this series is, you know... You even in this postseason so far for the Yankees came in with possibly by far the best lineup in baseball, and you know they won one of their games in extras. They same thing in their series against the Twins. You know they faced pretty good pitching, but the offense has not broken out yet. The most impressive thing for the offense has been A-Rod's clutch hitting.
Yeah,
it's been remarkable that this guy that. You know, it wasn't just that he wasn't hitting well. He was hitting horribly. I think going into this postseason, he had an 0-for-18 streak going. And now it seems every time that the game's on the line, he comes up with a big hit. You almost want him up more than you want Derek Jeter, which, you know,
which is surprising because Jeter's had a fantastic postseason again. I mean, he's pretty much the leader in all postseason offensive categories by now, just because he's been there for so long.
But they've gotten, you know, good starting pitching so far. Sabathia had a great game. AJ Burnett played well, got into trouble a bit, but was able to work out of it. And more impressively, I think their bullpen has played much better than I thought it would. Going into this game, though, CC Sabathia is their first time having him on 3 days rest, and you know they do just have the 3-man rotation, so we'll see how that works for them. But this is as much as you know, going down 2-2. You know, the series isn't over. You're just tied. I think if the Yankees want to win this series, this is a game they really have to have. They have CC Sabathia, their ace, going against Scott Kazmir, and you know, AJ Burnett and Andy Pettit have been playing well, but I think you have to feel a lot more comfortable if you're able to take this game.
Yeah,
and you know, I remember before the first postseason game for the Yankees with Burnett pitching against the Twins, there's just like a bunch of you know, jokes like praying for it to get the good AJ Burnett. And when you go into a game worrying which guy you're gonna get, you know, I don't know how much you want to rely upon him to send you to a 3-2 hole possibly, and I don't think you want to have to pitch Sabathia 3 times in this series.
Yeah, I mean obviously we may not be giving this guy enough credit. You look what he did last year at the end of the season with the Brewers, going 3 days rest whenever they needed it. It did fall apart for him after a while. So you got to wonder how long they can really keep this up with him. But
I mean, this is going to be the first time.
Right, he's on 3 days rest. So, but assuming that the Yankees make the World Series and assuming that it goes maybe 6-7 games, then you have to be a little worried.
It'll be interesting to see if they win this series in 7 games, what they plan on doing for the World Series.
I think Girardi would go with a 4-man rotation. I'm not sure who he would slot in there. It'd probably be Jabba. I know he's liked him out of the bullpen so far this postseason, but it would probably be him. But speaking of the bullpen, Girardi has been channeling Joe Torre, really using so many pitchers.
Yeah.
So far,
I thought in the second game that was definitely a thing that you know, caught my eye, was the fact that he would just use. I mean, it was a game that went to extra innings, and it was a close game, so you had to think that. And I know you can't look into the next inning; you have to play for this inning. But he would use. He used Jabba for, I believe, one batter. I think he did the same thing with Hughes. He got a couple innings out of Rivera, but you know, he had one pitcher left at the end of the night, and you know, there's nothing that said that they were going. They won the game off an error. If that error doesn't happen, you have just your one pitcher left, and you don't know how long the game's going to go. It's surprising how quickly he would send for a new pitcher when the guys are pitching well. I mean, there's a reason why it continued in extras.
Yeah, and just looking at his arsenal, he has some pretty good arms out of that bullpen. And you could argue that, well, he's, you know, he only faced one batter, but you still have to get up, warmed up. And that's a big psychological burden on these guys, too. Really, the only guy he hasn't used that much is Damaso Marte. And maybe a little bit of Alfredo Aceves. He's probably going to be more wary of using him now. But you know, guys like David Robertson have pitched very well. Phil Hughes, Phil Koch, Jabba has pitched well. But you just wonder with using him, and if the Yankees don't wrap this series up, or if they do in 7 games and they make it to the World Series, and that goes more than 5 games, how is this bullpen gonna hold up? It's a problem. But they have been getting good hitting, obviously from A-Rod. Teixeira is always that great backstop, great defensive player at first, and tremendous power, tremendous hitter.
Jeter's having another great postseason.
Always does. Johnny Damon hit a home run. Melky Cabrera, he can come up with a clutch hit.
Now, focusing back on the Angels, though, they're a big problem. I mean, they've gotten good pitching. They have a great rotation. They got a good game from Saunders, which was big. And their big problem has been their mental mistakes. They had a couple errors that really hurt them big time in the first two games.
Well, you look at when Ibar and Isturiz sort of muffed that little pop up and allowed a run to score,
and they lost the second game on an error.
When Ibar threw it away.
He had to go to first on that one. It was a terrible throw.
It was a ridiculous play. Obviously you hear Tim McCarver saying it over and over and over again. And whenever you hear Tim McCarver saying something, he said, well, I might as well just believe the opposite of it. But for once, he was right. I'm sorry, Tim, if you're listening. You were a great announcer once when you were back with the Mets. Anyway, but his play is obviously to first there. He can't go to second. That's, you go for the sure out. And
then it's two outs and no one, it's still got man on second and third, but the point was no run scored.
Yeah.
You're almost definitely not going to get the double play in that situation, and you live to see another out.
Yeah. And in playoff baseball, you look at how the Yankees have played generally defensively, and they played well. The Angels have not. But on the flip side, the Yankees haven't blown away the Angels, even though they've been given these opportunities.
Which goes back to, they've had, like we mentioned, the clutch hits from A-Rod. But overall, and going back to the Twin Series, I think that they had a team batting average of just over 200. They haven't put up the offensive numbers, and really for them, I feel like this game is a game that really gives them a chance. Kazmir is a great pitcher, but he's been struggling this year, and I think it'd be a good, if they want to win the series, a good decisive message would definitely be to win it handily tonight.
Absolutely, this is always the most critical game in best of seven series. Because either they're up 3-1 or they're tied at 2-2, and then the series pretty much just restarts. Then you have guys pitching on 3 days rest. So this is undoubtedly an essential game for the Yankees to win, as is the Angels. They have to get hitting from guys like Vlad Guerrero. He's always been known as a free swinger, but he's striking out too much.
Bobby Abreu.
Bobby Abreu's looked overmatched sometimes. Maybe he's got the jitters being back in Yankee Stadium. He never played in the new Yankee Stadium, but being back in the Bronx. And this Angels team, which is always so team-oriented and calm and confident under Mike Socha, all of a sudden, it seems like the Yankees have psyched them out a lot. You look at Torrey Hunter saying that, questioning guys, his own teammates in the media, and that never happens with this team.
I think it's partly, this is that they haven't advanced past the divisional round. They didn't advance past last year. They go in this year. They had a couple new players since the last time, and they beat the Red Sox. They go and they're playing this Yankee team that is 100 wins a season, looked like the best team, and they go out and they've played well against them. They're hoping to get to World Series, and they right off the bat they drop that pop up they have and then miscommunication. And I think that's part of what got to them is they lost that game because they had some, I think, that mistake early on. It kind of reminds me of last year, the Cubs against the Dodgers.
Yeah.
They made some errors early, fell into a hole, and then just psyched themselves out. But the big thing was they were able to come back and win the game yesterday. So looking at the Angels side is, of course, also a big game for them, like we said. If they can get on a roll past this point, then they go back up top to Lackey, to Saunders, to Weaver. I mean, they've got great pitchers that if they're able to win this game, get the series even again, get on a bit of a roll, they can definitely take the series.
And I think they have a distinct advantage in just one player. Kevin Jepsen out of the bullpen. He throws very hard. He's got a nasty curveball, and the Yankees have looked a little befuddled with him. So if the Angels can get a lead before passing it off to Fuentes to close it, give the ball to Jepsen. He's really confounded the Yankees, and pretty young guy, hard thrower, great breaking stuff. I really like the way he's looking, and I kind of think that this might be an audition like it was in the 2002 playoffs when K-Rod burst onto the scene. Maybe this is the same sort of thing with Jepsen, really proving his mettle in the playoffs. But then again, the Angels must get hitting from two key guys, Abreu and Vlad Guerrero. Kendry Morales has hit pretty well. But then again, I mean, with both these teams, the Angels and the Yankees, neither one has played well enough to really deem one or the other a runaway favorite, even though the Yankees are up 2-1. It's going to be a big game for tonight, to be sure, with Scott Kazmir starting. He did have an abysmal year. He went 2-2, though, after coming to the Angels and put up a 1.73 ERA in six starts with him. It's a very small sample size. It's really not much to go by, but he's always given the Yankees trouble. Can shut down those left-handed bats in the lineup. Should be an interesting game. And I think we're after Jeff Mathis getting that walk-off double last night, all of a sudden the behemoth Yankees don't look so powerful. I don't know. It's going to be a good series. I still see it going seven games. Evan, I don't know who you picked to win. Seeing how everything has unfolded.
Well, I still think I'm going to stick with my original prediction and stay with the Yankees on this one. Like I said the last time, I think we both agreed that this was a close matchup, has the potential of going the seven games. But I really like the Yankees matchup in this game. I know Kazmir has done well against them. He has been a good pitcher, but the Yankees lost last night. They have a lot of players. They're playing like a team, which was part of the problem of all their free agent signings. Just a bunch of all-stars doesn't beat a real team. But they really been playing as a team. It's kind of a cheesy example, not like completely showing it. But I liked at the end of the game, so when they got a walk-off win, how AJ Burnett would go up and kind of pie the people. It's something that big, but just the idea that to goof around with the players, to kind of grow close in that sense, that you're not just a bunch of players trying to get a paycheck at the end of the night. You're kind of having fun with the game. That's definitely a good sign for a team with a $200 million payroll.
And like
I said, they're going to have CC Sabathia, who has pitched. I mean, there are some questions about how he'd pitch in the postseason. He has pitched phenomenally so far. I mean, absolutely fantastic. He potentially could have gone a complete game the first game of this series. He's pitching really well. So at that point, even if Kazmir's playing well, this game's going to come down to the end. And I know the Angels had the walk-off win yesterday, but the Yankees have gotten really good at getting that clutch hit. And I still like the Yankees to pull this game out at that point with the 3-1 advantage.
I still have to stick with my original prediction, the Angels. I think it's going to be a pitcher's duel tonight, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see the Yankees win and then it goes that way. But I have a feeling that Mike Socha, after just three fundamentally poor games, look, last night Bobby Abreu rounding second base idiotically and getting thrown out after a leadoff double in the eighth inning. This is not how the Angels play. And having that, being at home for them, coming off a dramatic walk-off win, I think they'll win this. I think Socha's going to rally his troops. I think have enough leaders in that clubhouse to really to get everybody up for the game. And you have a good enough bullpen, good enough starting rotation to stifle the Yankees if And this, you know, is a pivotal game if Kazmir pitches well. And I think it will go seven games. And
yeah. Well, it's definitely a good series. And with the way that the Philly-Dodger series is going, probably looking like the one of the best series of the postseason so far. So it's definitely going to be exciting to watch. And we'll tune in tonight to check it out. I guess that's
5 o'clock Pacific time, so that's 8 o'clock on the East Coast.
And we'll go on a brief break and come back and recap some football.
It's 89.7 WRUC. 89.7 WRUC. Zach and Evan back with you once again. It's the EZ Connection, and after moving past hockey and baseball, move into the Mavens territory now. It is week 6 in the NFL. It's hard to believe it's week 6 already, and some major movement for the New York area teams, Evan.
Well, the Jets and Bills faced off this weekend, so you know you have one New York team has to win, one New York team has to lose. I think, though, if you're talking about Jet fans, I feel like you have to be disappointed about this game. I mean, the Bills won the past. Well, they lost against the Browns, but you know, beating the Jets, they just haven't looked that good this season. And you hate to say that. They started out the season, they almost upset the Patriots. Fred Jackson was looking great, but recently, you know, the offense has kind of sputtered. They've had some defensive injuries, and they haven't looked that great so far, and a lot of people are asking for Dick Geron to be fired already. Trent Edwards hasn't looked that good, so you have to consider, is he going to be the quarterback of the future? Are you looking to acquire someone in the offseason? Terrell Owens has been a big free agent bust.
Yeah.
The offensive line has had problems, and the defense hasn't been exactly stellar. And you go over to the Jets, and they start the season 3-0.
Looking like world beaters, and they're confident. And everybody's excited, but now,
I mean, you bring Rex Ryan over, and he has, it may be a little overconfident, you know, he instills this attitude that, you know, you're not going to give up a single yard, you're not going to give up a touchdown, you know, nothing. You're going to be a dominant defense, and they start out that way, very impressive. You know, Mark Sanchez is this rookie. He only has Jericho Cotchery and hopefully, you know, a good running game. And yet, you know, despite that, he played like a rookie, but he played. The biggest thing was he wasn't turning the ball over. He wasn't throwing for 300 yards. He wasn't, you know, completing 65% of his passes. But he had more touchdowns and interceptions, and that was the important part. But I believe this Sunday he threw probably as many interceptions as touchdowns the entire season.
It seemed that way.
Probably like a little exaggeration, but I believe he threw 5 picks.
Wow.
This past game against the Bills as they lose 16-13 in overtime, and you know, for a team like we said start 3-0, they've lost the past 3 games, and the first game, you know, they go up against the Saints. They held that offense to just, they held them to 10 points, but Mark Sanchez, for the first time, really gets exposed as the rookie he is. You know, it's one thing, like I said, you know, you're not going to win the game for the Jets, but the point was he wasn't really costing them the game when their defense was playing so well. Basically gave the Saints 14 points with his 2 turnovers. And they lose that game, but now they're going to play the Dolphins. You know, the Dolphins haven't played that well. Have a new quarterback, Chad Henne. They beat the Bills for their first win of the season. And, you know, this defense is supposed to step right back up. This is a 3-1 team. And they let the Dolphins go right down the field on them several occasions. And, I mean, the defense just really did not look that good. And I thought Mark Sanchez looked pretty good that season. Not amazing, but, you know, the last time he got the ball, he put the Jets ahead with a touchdown drive. And I thought he's clicking with Braylon Edwards, and you know they lose that game a little disappointed. And now the mark of a true playoff team, a true top team, is to put this disappointing game behind you and use that as motivation to maybe you know, put up a much better performance and make sure nothing like that happens again. You go play the Bills, who just had a pretty poor performance against the Browns, losing 6-3 against a team that was previously winless, I believe. And, you know, you go in there, you go up early, get completely shut out in the second half, and eventually wound up losing to the Bills, who had Ryan Fitzpatrick start most of that game.
Yeah, and Sanchez looked bad. But I think the biggest blow for this team right now is the loss of Chris Jenkins for the season.
Yeah, that is absolutely huge. This, for a 3-4 defense, to be able to have a nose tackle, take on two blockers, and even get some penetration in the backfield, it's possibly one of the most important positions to that defense, outside of a pass rushing linebacker. He was Pro Bowl selection last season. He was playing really well this year. And you have to remember, for most of the time Mancini was coaching with the 3-4, they didn't have that nose tackle, and mm-hmm. their defense was always pretty bit poor against the run. And they picked it up when they picked up Chris Jenkins last year, and they've kept it up this year. And for a defense that's been struggling a bit, to lose possibly its top players is definitely going to hurt them a lot. And at 3-3 right now, they're a game behind in the division. And I mean, I don't think you can even say that they're a favorite to even win the wild card. And
they've really, really just gone straight downhill. You know, we were looking at them, say, okay, 3-1, they'll be, 5-2 before you know it. Well, not so much. They're 3-3, and if you're Rex Ryan, you got to say, listen, guys, we've won 3, we've lost 3. This is a new start to the season.
And for me, personally, I mean, I think it makes you wonder how good of a head coach Rex Ryan is. Now, in no way am I saying fire the guy after 6 games, but the big thing he brought to this team was he had this great defensive scheme for the Ravens, and he brought it over and he implemented it with the Jets, and it's performing well. But you have to be more than a defensive guru to be a head coach. And you go to the offense, and Mark Sanchez has been playing worse each game. That's possibly has more to do with the fact that, you know, defensive coordinators are getting to see more of him than bad coaching. But it's more the attitude that you try to get your team to have. And you think about the good teams like the Patriots, and that's a team that in the best of times, when they were considered the dynasty, they never lost 2 games in a row. Because when a well-coached team, after a loss, they're just able to pick it up and play a lot better the next week, especially after a disappointing loss. You know, they like a team like that, you know, lose disappointing fashion, generally they would blow out the team the following week. And the Jets, not only did they not do that, but they lost. Not only did they lose the game still, but they lost to a team that they really should have beaten without extra motivation. And their defense is slowly regressing each week. And you're expecting for them to make the postseason, for their defense to not play as dominant as they were, but to play well, and then hope like the offense to start catching up as Sanchez gets more and more reps. But that's hardly been the case, as Sanchez has been playing worse. And the most surprising thing about that is you look at their running game. They had over 300 yards on the ground.
And Thomas Jones really had a career game. They couldn't do anything with it. I mean, this is somebody, say, if he's clicking, if you just look at one stat, you say, wow, the Jets are going to win this game. No. Sanchez threw 5 picks. The defense was a little bit porous. But it just didn't play a good game like they played in the beginning of the season.
The big thing, though, is the running game should have taken pressure off of Sanchez. So, I mean, I don't know why he was forcing the ball so often. He has a new weapon in Braylon Edwards. He has pretty good receivers when you think Braylon Edwards, Jericho Koshiri, Dustin Keller. And he obviously had a good running game this week, and they held the Bills to 13 points in regulation. You'd hope that your quarterback would be able to get you a little bit more with what he has around him, with the offensive line that has how many former first round picks on it. And, you know, he didn't play well. For the Jets to really turn this around, they're going up against the Raiders now. The Raiders just beat the Eagles, so this game is no longer a gimme. The Jets could possibly be looking at 3-4, going to play the Dolphins again, and they look worse this week than they did the last time they played the Dolphins. Without Chris Jenkins, imagine how well the wild card's going to do against them then.
Yeah. Well, I think, obviously this team has to go into either of two directions. Either it's going to spiral downhill and become the Jets of, the Jets of last year, and really just everything just falls apart. Or you have this new attitude under Rex Ryan and say, listen, guys, we got to man up.
But see, that's the thing. That's the point I'm talking about. It's, you know, you want to say, all right, you know, the Jets started 3-0. They lost one game to a good team, and they had an upset. But the point was, if they had this new attitude like you're talking about, they wouldn't have lost the Bills, and they wouldn't have played so poorly. My point is, I don't know if they have this attitude, and if anything, it seems like each loss is getting them more and more down. They had this confidence to start the season, and they were playing well, and for a team under new direction, you know, winning is always the way for you to buy into the system.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they lose three straights, and the point is, with the way they've been playing, I don't know if they have, the mental toughness to say, all right, guys, you know, we've lost three straight. We're going to play the Raiders. We've got to win this week. We've got to play better, because they haven't done that yet. I think if anything, they're getting more down on themselves, and not that it will happen, but it's more likely for them to go into a downward spiral than for them to pick things up.
Yeah, well, it's really old versus new here for the Jets. Are they going to regress, or are they going to move forward? Nobody really knows. This next game is going to be a pivotal one for them, certainly.
And for the Bills, you know, it was definitely nice for them to be able to pull out a win after they haven't had one since they beat the Bucks. But for the team offensively, still, you know, that it'd be interesting to see what they do in the offseason, because they definitely have to make a move. Dick Jaron has been steady for them, I'd say. I think they've obviously regressed this season. But, you know, just to start out, I thought, you know, he kept them where they should be. But I don't think he's made anyone really that much better. I don't think Marshawn Lynch or Trent Edwards has emerged. You know, I haven't seen any player on this team, you know, get a lot better under him. I don't think he makes the best decisions, and I don't think he has the best game plans. I think the best thing for the Bills to do, and I don't know if they'll do it, because you know, they've always shied away from spending money, but I think they do have talent on this team. I think they need to get an established good head coach. There are a couple of them. You know, there's Mike Shanahan, Marty Schottenheimer, Bill Cowher. I think you've got
I could see Shanahan being a good fit.
I think Shanahan would be a great fit. It's, can you convince him that he wants a coach in Buffalo? And I think if the best thing they can do for this team in the offseason is try to convince one of those top coaches. In my opinion, I think Shanahan would be a perfect fit. And then say, listen, you know, we have Trent Edwards, Marshawn Lynch, Lee Evans. Do you think Edwards is the quarterback for the future, or do you think we should draft one? Now, with the way the season's going, you'd think that they'll have a high enough pick to get, you know, a Colt McCoy, or if teams are still willing to take a chance on him, Sam Bradford, one of those guys, and under Shanahan, you know, make this a top offense, because they have a lot of weapons, and, you know, they do have good defensive players. They just drafted a defensive end, Aaron Maven, this past offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Still have Chris Kelsey, Aaron Schobel, Marcus Stroud. I've always liked their linebackers, Paul Poloznyi, Angelo Correll, Kavika Mitchell.
Yeah.
And they just drafted Leotis McLevin and Terrence McGee. They have players on that on that defense, and as long as you get Shanahan to bring in a credible defensive coordinator, I think he can greatly improve this offense. I think at the very least he can you know, tutor a quarterback and give this team, you know, its first great quarterback since Jim Kelly. And that will help return this team to greatness again.
As we move on from to other scores from Week 6 in the NFL, we remind you, if you want to call us here in the station, just give us a ring. It's 518, that's the area code, 518-388-6151. That's 388-6151. And you can talk to me or Evan or both of us on the air, and you'll be on with the first station in the nation, 89.7 WRUC. And Evan, we look at some of the scores from Week 6, and there has been a lot of movement. I know we've already touched upon that, a lot of shaking up in New York area sports, especially in football. And we look at the Giants, really a blowout game against the Saints.
Yeah, and, you know, going into this week, you could have definitely made the case that the Giants were the best team in the National Football League right now. They go into this game with the best pass defense, and I know you say that the argument is they went up against some weak opponents, but, you know, I don't care who you go up against.
They
if
did.
You're able to go get four straight weeks without giving up 200 yards and having the quarterback complete less than 50% of his passes, I mean, that's impressive. It's one thing to beat a team, but to absolutely demolish them like the Giants did shows you at the very least that they're a good team. I mean, you take the Eagles, who have been a good team, and they were upset by the Raiders this past week. So no games to give me. So just because they played poor teams, I mean, 5-0 is still 5-0. Now you go against the Saints team, and I mean, they didn't even look like they belonged on the same field as them, which is really surprising. I mean, the Saints have played well, but they went up against the Bills and the Jets, and Drew Brees didn't throw for a touchdown. He threw for maybe five this game. I mean, that's I don't know how many he actually threw for, but he did not look like the Giants stopped him at all. There's certain times where I felt like the Giants could take their defense off the field and the Saints offense would score just as fast.
Yeah. It was not a very good game.
And the thing about it is the Giants still have talent, but what's troubling me the most with this game is, you know, maybe just a knee-jerk reaction, you know, in the coming up weeks, I hope to be proven wrong, but I'm really worried about the coaching of this team. And I'm going to start this off by talking about the defensive coordinator. You come into this year and they signed a lot of, you know, not a lot, but they signed a decent amount of free agents. They bolstered their defensive line. They got a playmaking linebacker, and really, except for losing James Butler, kept the same team that went 12-4 last year and played great under Steve Spagnuolo. My biggest concern coming into this season was losing Spagnuolo, who was a great defensive coordinator, and then bringing up Bill Sheridan. Now, this is a bit ago, and it's hard to remember the Giants being that bad team after, you know, Super Bowl and then 12-4. You know, you try to put that out of your mind. But under Tim Lewis, I don't think I'm alone in thinking I did not have that much confidence in the defense. If an opposing team came onto the field, you know, two minutes and they were going to score, they were down by enough that a touchdown would put them ahead, I'd have no confidence. Well, the very little confidence that the Giants would be able to hold them. Under Spagnuolo, that was one of the most impressive things that I don't think got talked about enough, that when the game was on the line and the defense was on the field, they made a stop. And they would do that a lot, and it was very impressive. And now you lose him, who's a great defensive coordinator, and it's not like, you know, going from Tim Lewis to Spagnuolo, the Giants all of a sudden added tons of playmakers. They had mostly guys on the team already. I mean, Corey Webster was under Tim Lewis for a couple of years before Spagnuolo, you know, was able to coach him and have him turn into a great player. But the big thing was Bill Sheridan and all of the position players, the position coaches, were on the same staff as Tim Lewis. When they fired Tim Lewis and hired Spagnuolo, they didn't replace anyone else. They kept all the same people. So by promoting Bill Sheridan, you were promoting the same guy that didn't do much when Tim Lewis was the defensive coordinator. On top of that, I think one of the big topics and why they signed Michael Boley is how poorly Giants linebackers have been doing. Maybe Jesse Armstead was the last great Giants linebacker. I mean, after him, you have Antonio Pierce coming, and he's been good. I thought he's a very smart player, but I think he's gotten worse each season that he's been here. And I don't think any of the draft picks have turned into anything great. So you take a guy that was under Tim Lewis, who was the linebackers coach under one of the worst times for Giants linebackers, and you promote him to defensive coordinator. And I guess the hope is, you know, he saw Steve Spagnuolo's system. They're going to keep that. How will he do? Well, he's played he's played some weak teams, played well against them, but he played the Cowboys and he's played the Saints, and those are probably the two most credible offenses he's played. And he's given up at 30 plus points, at 48 this weekend, and I think that's the most points they've given up since 1999. 48 points, even in some of their most horrible performances, they've never looked that poor. The Saints had one drive in the entire first half that didn't go for a touchdown, and it was stopped on fourth and goal at the 1 yard line. 34. I'm sorry, they missed the extra point going into the half, and I was trying to see for the longest time what was the Giants' game plan. The Jets had this scheme, and they went after Breeze and they made him uncomfortable. They gave up 10 points. The Giants are going in; they're going against this top offense, and you have to say, well, at least what I thought would be the game plan is, you know, make sure Drew Breeze doesn't beat you. So how is the Giants going to go about this? For most of the first half, they didn't blitz. They sent a four man rush, and it's like, okay, I guess I understand that to an extent. You know, they're going to do a spread offense. You want to cover the guys, but the four man rush wasn't getting there. So first of all, you have to say, what's going on? I thought this was a great defensive line. I have OCU Manure against a backup left tackle. I have Justin Tuck. I'm rotating in Kiwanuka. I have Fred Robbins. I have Cofield. I have all these guys, and They weren't getting there at all. He wasn't even whiffed. They didn't even come close to touching Drew Brees for most of the first half. So I guess the game plan was to hope that the four-man rush would go. And for most of the time, I saw them in zone. I didn't understand this. I thought we had some great players in the secondary. Corey Webster, Kevin Dockery, Terrell Thomas. I thought a lot of zone. And then also, part of being a great coach is knowing what your weakness is and making sure that the other team can't exploit it. Well, the Saints said, you know, C.C. Brown's in there for Kenny Phillips. We don't think he's good. If we ever get a one-on-one matchup against C.C. Brown, we're going to exploit it. And they did. And there was no adjustment to try to help C.C. Brown in any way. At the same time, I didn't think he had a good game. I thought he played pitifully. And hopefully that was one game. But as of now, I'd really like to see if we can get some other safety there. I thought that was probably Jerry Reese's biggest blunder so far as a GM, was going into the season with one backup being C.C. Brown, who was let go by the Texans, who don't exactly have the greatest secondary.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Did the Giants beat themselves here, or are we not giving the Saints enough credit? They are a very, very good team.
So the thing is, I agree. The Saints are a good team, and I do not... I'm not saying that if the Giants, you know, played better, that they would have won the game. But from what we saw, it wasn't
much of a contest.
It was fairly certain the Saints, you know, the Saints had a very good chance of winning this game. But it's one thing to lose to a team; it's another to just be absolutely dominated. And I know the offense didn't play that well, but they did not play that poorly. I thought that was the best running performance this team has put up the entire season. I mean, they only ran the ball 17 times. I know they didn't get 100 yards, but I really liked the way that they were running the ball for the most part. And Eli's, maybe it had something to do with his injury, but he was missing some open shots down the field. And you know, to an extent, I understand. I'm pretty sure the Gilbride probably noticed something for the Saints defense on third down, and that's why they went for some long shots early. But I really think what the Giants should have done is against a top offensive team like the Saints, you're not going to win in a shootout most likely, even though they do have a good offense. I would have tried to make it more of a Giant game, how they won the Super Bowl. Good defense and, you know, a smash-mouth offensive attack. I would have tried to slow the game down. I'm surprised they didn't run more with the success they're having. And they were having success in the, like, in the intermediate passing game. I would have tried to have some 10-play drives, you know, keep the Saints off the field, try to get them a little rusty. And then on defense, I don't understand how you don't blitz Breeze. He does well against the blitz, but at the same time, the only way to shut down an attack like that is to throw off the rhythm, and you have to get Breeze moving around to do that.
If you don't try, then you're not going to succeed, and it seems like that's what happened.
I mean, it was both a combination of poor performances and bad coaching. I really did not like this game. I want to see how the rest of the season goes for Bill Sheridan. I want to see a better thing. It wasn't only just that they didn't have scheme, but I didn't think that they gave the players confidence. I don't know if the players didn't buy into the system, but I thought a lot of them looked shaky for a decent amount of the game. I'm worried to see Eli's accuracy with the deep ball going down. That was a little troublesome, but I mean, Nix has looked good the past couple weeks. Manningham, after his couple drops that one game, he's been picking up. Steve Smith has been great all season. Hickson was great returning, but the defensive line did not get a pass rush. The coordinator, I did not think had a good scheme, and CC Brown got absolutely burned. And even Webster looked out of it a bit. Like I said, for the Jets, you know, how do they respond after a thing like that? How good this Giants team is, we'll see Sunday night when they play the Cardinals. They're playing another good offensive team that just ran all over the Seahawks. And if they truly are a playoff team, if they're a possible Super Bowl team, they're going to come back and they're going to win this game.
Even if they lose, they'll still be 5-2. But
I'm not going to say that I'm looking at the record here and saying, oh, you know, 5-2, their season's done. It's other things that you have to look at besides the record.
Yeah.
And this team just got embarrassed. They were supposed to
at least compete.
they were playing for which team was the best in the NFC, and it was no problem for the Saints. And this team has too much pride. And Tom Coughlin, I think he has been a good coach recently. If this is a good team, they should get their head on straight, and they should come up and they should come up with a way to beat the Cardinals. And I think a big thing Sheridan has to do is come up with a good scheme and find a way to hide the deficiencies of CC Brown's game, because he got exposed, and other teams are going to try the same thing until the Giants find an answer for it. And I'm just more interested. I'm not a defensive coordinator. You know, I don't know exactly what the best scheme is going to be for attacking the Cardinals, but I really want to know how this defense responds. I want to know how Sheridan responds. And they're going up against another good offensive team. And you know, if they have a performance like this, if they have another performance where they give up a ton of points to Cardinals, I don't care that they're 5-2, and you know, that's a pretty good record. You're not winning the Super Bowl playing like that, and that's at the end of the day, that's the goal.
Yeah, it's 3:26 WRUC time. We're going to take a little break, but we'll be right back with more football with the Maven. To my left, Evan. I'm Zach. You're listening to 89.7 WRUC. 89.7 WRUC, Wilco. And before that, the Black Keys on 89.7 WRUC, streaming live on the internet at wruc.union.edu. Give us a call here in the station, Evan and Zach with you, at 518-388-6151. That's 518-388-6151. Evan the Maven, we're still looking at football, and an interesting week 6 indeed.
Yeah, and the Bengals had been looking strong this season. They were one miracle play by the Broncos away from being 5-0. They beat both the Ravens and the Steelers and the Browns within their division. So they really look like the class of the AFC North. And they go and play a Texans team that's been struggling. Some weeks they're good, some weeks they're bad. And they wound up losing this game by the score of, I believe, 28-17.
Yep.
And, you know, the big thing for them was that they've been getting great production from Cedric Benson. And, you know, they have a good quarterback in Carson Palmer, and their defense has been playing great. But the Texans, good coaching decisions. They managed to bottle up Cedric Benson on defense, and the Bengals have not been getting the deep pass, so the offense struggled a bit. Weren't able to put up the points that they were used to, and more importantly, on defense, they've been playing very well. One time, Odom went down with an injury, and the Texans just did a bunch of short passing kind of screens, and Steve Slayton, Andre Johnson were able to have some big games. Slayton, a running back, had over 100 yards receiving this game.
Yeah.
And Matt Schaub looked great, threw for 4 touchdowns.
Schaub really just spread the ball around all around the field. It was a great performance, I thought, by Schaub. That was the difference in this game.
And it was an impressive game by the Texans, who at 3-3, you know, could, if they can keep some momentum. Their big thing is, you know, they've had some good wins, but they haven't been able to keep it up. If they're able to, you know, have a couple of good weeks in a row, kind of build on this, you know, record-wise, they're not out of it. They just need to get those performances going. And for the Bengals, I wouldn't say it's the end of the world. I still think the big thing missing from this team is they have to be able to get some deep strikes into this offense. That was what they were known for in 2005 when they won the division, the last time they made the playoffs in, like, the last decade. Carson Palmer got injured in the playoff game against the Steelers, and ever since he came back, it just, you know, has been a little shaky. But they really need to get some deep strikes in, get some quick scores. And if you're able to do that, I mean, teams are going to key on Cedric Benson now, because that's what the Texans did. That's been Cincinnati's offensive success. That's what makes them different from previous years. They have a running game. But, you know, if you don't have that deep passing game in there, teams are going to start keying in on that. And until they do that, I expect similar performances for Cedric Benson, because so many teams are going to focus on them. I don't say we'll do as poorly as only 44 yards. I think the Bengals have a little better coaching than that, but they really got to get some deep passes into it. Yeah. And on defense, I guess they have to learn how to play in space a bit. That was probably their biggest problem. You know, they have good corners. They've had good linebackers. They generally played well against the run and gotten a pass rush, but...
But it was encouraging, though, this week to see a Chad Ochocinco. I can't really bring myself to say Ochocinco, but that's another thing. For the first time in 19 games, finishing with more than 100 yards in receiving.
And he's still a pretty good player, and they have Lavernius Coles, and they're hoping Chris Henry were to step up. Andre Caldwell has been pretty good for them this season. And the big thing for the Bengals, like I said, you got to get that deep passing game in. The biggest flaw that we've seen on defense was this week, and that was they weren't doing well in screen pass, which means they're not playing well in space, they're not getting to the ball carrier, they're not taking good angles, and they're not tackling well. And they have to learn to do that. And they weren't supposed to be that competitive this season, but you know, at 4-2, they still have a good team. Mike Zimmer has been good defensive coordinator for them. I really think that the troubles that they had in this game weren't so big that they can't work them out throughout the season. They've looked good. They still have talents. I don't think this is good teams still lose games, and I still think the Bengals are on the right path. And just looking back at the Texans, they just have to keep it up. They had a good game plan. They have a good team. They've got to keep this going if they want to make the playoffs. Go to the Lions and Packers. And I really think for the Lions,
it's one step forward, it's one step back. But they're gradually inching forward, it looks like.
I really think that, you know, I read a post by a Lions fan that I realized I kind of agreed with. I don't think this team is that much better than it was last season. I think it wasn't as bad as people thought. Like, yes, it obviously was pretty poor not to get a single win, but it wasn't like they were blown out in every single one of those games. They were competitive, and we were noticing this season that they were competitive and kind of giving them more credit than that. They still are in the lower tier talent-wise, but the big thing for them is that more of their talent this year are young players who are going to get better. And that's something that you're going to look for. Matthew Stafford's going to come back in. He was playing better each week. He, as of right now, like it's only been a couple of games, but he seems to be a good pick. He's going to be a good quarterback. Calvin Johnson was also injured. You're going to get him back. He's a young player who's been playing really well, who's only going to get better. Brandon Pettigrew, they have young players. Definitely not this season, but I mean, I can see with some good off-season moves, definitely bump up to, you know, possibly that 6-10 to 8-8, and you know, with a lucky start, they can be, you know, like a Broncos team of this year.
Yeah.
The point is, they're still around the same competitive level, but with more hope for the future. The Packers, I'm sure they're just happy to be able to get a good game out. They've had troubles on the offensive line. They still did this past game, but they were able to put up 26 points. You know, they have good position players on the offense. That offensive line is going to be a problem, and I can definitely see it keeping them out of the postseason, which is a sad thing because this is a very talented team, and I'm very surprised that they looked past the offensive line in this offseason. They were so convinced that they were going to be fine. That was a big oversight.
Yeah. And you have to take this win with a grain of salt. They took 13 penalties, rather, and Rodgers got sacked 5 times against a 1-5 now 1-5 team.
That's the big thing is that they haven't been getting good protection. I don't think they're getting the best pass rush now. Their best defensive end is now a linebacker who's been in coverage too many times. In passing situations, not that he's been bad there, but you know, you'd rather him be going after the quarterback. They're still not a bad team. They're still a talented team, and you know, they'll probably be in it. But you know, it definitely would not surprise me if they missed the playoffs and had another, you know, 6-10 to 8-8 season. Moving on to the Lions and the Jaguars. The Rams and the Jaguars. I guess this is was this 2 wins for the Jaguars, or I think they lost to us last week. I wouldn't quite say this was a step forward for the Rams. I don't know how well the Jaguars have been playing. They at least have Maurice Jones-Drew, who played phenomenally for them, but the defense hasn't been that great for the Jaguars, and the passing game has not been good.
And I think they're lucky to be at 3-3 right now. I could definitely see him 2-4.
Yeah, they're not looking like a good team, and with the Titans not playing well, I guess it might just be the Texans challenging the Colts if they are challenging the Colts. Like I said, you know, they're 3-3, so like other teams, if they work certain things out, they can get into it. But they haven't put up, you know, nice enough performances to say that they're really going to turn things around. So at this point, it seems unlikely. They're not out of it with the record for the Rams. They have a game. They get into overtime. You know, they were competitive, really, for one of the first couple times. I mean, I guess they played well against the Redskins, too. But, you know, they lost now Donnie Avery, who's their best offensive player.
That's I mean, obviously, this team isn't going anywhere, but that's just... that's a huge blow.
And, I mean, the defensive players that they drafted, you'd hope you get more from. They drafted Adam Carriker and Chris Long. And, you know, I haven't been watching the Rams games that closely, but they don't seem to be making that big of an impact. That hurts. You'd have 2 first-round picks on defense that aren't really stepping up. They drafted Ty Hill a couple seasons ago. He did so well that they traded him for, like, a 4th-round pick. The point, they're not getting production out of their draft, and they've been trying for a while to improve that defense because they had such a great offense. Well, the offense got old. The big parts are gone, and Mark Bolger isn't playing as well as he used to, and so now the offense has caught up to the defense, and that they're both playing pretty poorly now. I guess it's a good sign that they're still playing well. I don't know. They're getting a lot of turnovers and penalties, so I don't know how great of a job Spagnuolo is doing as head coach. You know, he's definitely a great defensive coordinator. I think you need to give him at least a season to see how they play down the stretch. But this team does not have a lot of talent. We'll move on to the Ravens and Vikings. And a
fantastic game.
It's so interesting that Minnesota played great for most of this game. And, you know, we're really proving to be one of the best teams in the league. And, you know, competing with the Saints for the best team in the NFC, they were looking phenomenally against a Ravens team that's supposed to be good. I mean, it wasn't just that they were beating them, but they're the first team that were truly dominating them. The last two Ravens losses came near the end of games against the Bengals and Patriots. And then in the fourth quarter, I guess that the Vikings just, I mean, they've been doing this all season. They did it against the Packers, too. They just, you know, assumed that the game was in hand or whatever and kind of lightened up a bit, and the Ravens took advantage, scored 21 points in the fourth quarter, and if it wasn't for a missed field goal and a 44-yard field goal, which is definitely makeable, the Vikings would have lost, and the Ravens would have won that game. So, I mean, I hope, yeah, I mean, for the Vikings, if they want to win the Super Bowl, like, they can't let that happen. They can't just give up in the fourth quarter. And this better be a wake-up call to them, because they are a really talented team. Brett Favre has been playing great. I think he has 12 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, something like that. He's thrown for over 1,000 yards. They've been picking it up the past couple weeks. They've had a couple 300-yard performances. Adrian Peterson got 100 yards for the first time in a couple weeks. Sidney Rice is really emerging as a threat next to Bernard Berry. And, of course, we've known how well Percy Harvin has been playing.
The Vikings look like a well-balanced team. And
they just need to finish out games. They need to play well in the fourth quarter. That's been their biggest thing right now. They haven't played 4 quarters of good football. And, you know, they've kind of been lackadaisical in the fourth quarter, and they can't allow that to continue, especially against good teams. So going up against the Steelers this week, who are a good team, and Big Ben's been known to make some comebacks. So they really got to shut those guys down. But, you know, they really do look like a good team right now. They're 6-0, definitely best in that division. Could challenge the Saints for best in the NFC, and yeah, I mean, we could be.
I don't see that quite yet until they play a more complete game. But I mean, they're complete game, as in you were talking about, as in playing every single minute.
Well, I definitely think that they have the potential to challenge them. I think if this team gets its head on straight and plays for four quarters, I think they're more talented than the Saints personally. Because while the Saints are better on offense, and the Saints have been playing well on defense, I think the Vikings can shut down teams on defense.
And moving on, you know, we look at the hapless Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers. 27-14 was the final in that game. The Steelers winning it, and it wasn't a bad game. Cleveland held its own for a little bit, but really couldn't keep it together with the Steelers. There is some concern with the Steelers, though, with their turnovers. Looking at that, it's unnerving, because you look at a team like this that is perennially good, a good team the Steelers are, and have a great threat in Ben Roethlisberger, but when you look at a team that can turn over the ball so much, that can lead to playoff disaster. And for a team so dependent on good offense and tight playing style, that's a major concern. They have 4 turnovers in that game. The Steelers are now 4-2. The terrible Browns are just one of the worst teams. They're 1-5. You could make an argument that they're worse than the Titans. Probably not worse than the Rams. Maybe worse than the Bucks. It's just there's no cohesiveness on that team. Former Jets coach Eric Mangini has not gained any respect in locker room. And magazine Rolling Stone actually just blasted him. And when you're getting heat from outside publications that aren't from sports publications, you know you're probably in trouble. The Browns, though, just they don't have a good quarterback. They don't have much of a defense or offense. Derek Anderson has been playing poorly. If Brady Quinn, though, this is his golden opportunity to shine. He hasn't done anything. Derek Anderson will continue to play because Brady Anderson, as bad as Anderson can be, Quinn probably is worse right now, and that's hard to see for the former Fighting Irish quarterback who came into the league with such great hopes. Moving on, looking at another terrible team, the Tampa Bay Bucks lost to the Carolina Panthers 28-21, and this game was really put away in the third quarter when Carolina scored 14 points as opposed to Tampa Bay's 7. It was not by any means a throwaway game. The Bucks put up a pretty good fight, and that's, you can be argued then that they're not maybe they're better than the Browns, but their passer rating overall is just terrible, and at the quarterback position they haven't been able to do anything. We talked about the importance of D'Angelo Williams on the Panthers. He had 152 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns on 30 carries. That's a great game for him. Something to be concerned about, though, is Jake Delhomme. He's just not been playing up to his potential. Josh Johnson didn't have a bad game for the Bucks, but they still lost. In the receiving department, it really wasn't much of a game for the Bucks with Stroder and Bryant. Didn't catch that many balls. You still look at the Panthers and the possibility of Steve Smith coming back and making a big impact. And if the Panthers need to, if the Panthers are to go far in this season, they have to start right now. They're 2-3. Jake Delhomme needs to buckle down, or they have to look for another option at quarterback. Because no matter, even if D'Angelo plays very well, not having a good quarterback is an Achilles heel to any team. In other scores, the Redskins and the Chiefs faced off. The Chiefs winning 14-6. That was a match in futility. With the Chiefs just eking out the Redskins. The Redskins, boy oh boy, Jim Zorn has been relieved of play calling duties. It's just probably a matter of time now until he's fired. For a Redskins team that has been so willing to open its wallet to free agents and seems to be always the big spender in the offseason, they have to perhaps look at a different strategy. After being everybody's darlings last year of the NFL, they've fallen on very hard times, the Redskins have. And, at 2-4, they're not looking like a good team. Neither really are the Chiefs, even though they did pick up a win. You have a talented... You have a talented quarterback. Sorry, we just lost. Hello, testing. Okay. We're back on the air. We just lost reception here in the studio, just briefly, but technical difficulties notwithstanding. The Chiefs, with a potentially very good quarterback in Matt Cassel, have really not done much. They don't have much of a team around him. And one of the biggest upsets of the week, moving on, the Oakland Raiders beat the Eagles 13-9, and it was really kind of an embarrassment for the Eagles. They thought they had this one in the bag, no problem. But the Raiders, with their not-so-good quarterback, Jamarcus Russell, didn't have a bad game, threw 224 yards, did have two interceptions, only threw for one touchdown. Donovan McNabb, though, didn't play well. Russell got the ball to his receivers when he did. Zach Miller had a nice game. He scored the game's only touchdown, actually. It was an 86-yard first quarter catch. And this game was probably memorable only in the fact that this could be a crimp in the Eagles' plans. This team is middling out now at 3-2, and they had a chance to be a very easy 4-1. And when that happens, the dynamic of that team, coupled with the volatility of the Philadelphia fans, that could be a recipe for disaster. The high-powered offense, Cardinals, drubbed the Seahawks 27-3, putting up 14 points in the first quarter. You knew it was over then. And speaking of drubbings, New England Patriots beat the Tennessee Titans 59-0. They just completely took the fourth quarter off, too, and Tennessee couldn't even get 3 points. New England goes as follows: 10 points in the first quarter, 35 in the second, 14 in the third. And Brady looked good, and the Patriots, all of a sudden, with the Jets losing, are in first place in that division. And Brady looks to be maybe back to his old self. Probably never going to be quite the same after his knee injury, but you never know. Now, with the Patriots playing the winless Tennessee Titans, and that's, for other teams in that division, this is an essential game next week to win, because with the Patriots winning 59-0, you got to believe that Brady and the offense will run ragged over the lowly Bucks next week. So, and the Titans, I mean, they're really not a terrible team. They just, after being such a good team last year, it's a classic case of getting off to a bad start and losing confidence and just being so bad. And 0-6, hasn't been a happy season in Tennessee for those Titans. The Falcons and the Bears. Falcons, behind Matt Ryan, eked out the Bears 21-14. This was a pretty good game. The Bears, who have played well under Jay Cutler, dropped to 3-2 on the season. They had great defensive struggles there, red zone problems. Matt Ryan did play well, though, catapulting his team to 4-1. The running game really isn't quite there yet for the Falcons, but as long as you have a young powerful quarterback in there, it gives you some leeway to develop that running game a little bit more. And finally, the last game of the week was another good one. The Denver Broncos, who under Josh McDaniels have been a revelation, beating the Chargers 34-23. And it's a very balanced team. McDaniels has everybody loose, and after such a weird offseason, losing Jay Cutler, and all the speculation about McDaniels being involved with that, he's really flipped that on its ear and proven to Denver fans that he is not a bad choice for head coach at all. He's young, he's fun, and the Broncos are playing very well. Good offense, good defense, good pass defense. And they're one of the top teams in the league now. It's 6-0. Along with the Vikings, the Saints, who were 5-0, and the Colts, who were 5-0. And remember, the Giants dropped to 4-1, so they're definitely in the top five still. But that was a tough loss for the Giants this week, as it was for the Jets. Looking at the Chargers game, the poor Chargers don't seem to quite have it together. The passing game is very good, but, the defensive and offensive lines just aren't quite there. And granted, they did go up against a good team in in the Denver Broncos, but it was not good enough. The Chargers fall to 2-3 on the year, and to pick it up in a relatively weak division, they need to get better line efforts from their guys. Even though Philip Rivers continues to pass the ball, LaDainian Tomlinson, see if I can get that right, always a threat on the ground. Those two combined, you can have the explosive offense, but if you can't protect these guys with good coverage or good blocking, then none of it's all for naught. But an interesting week, really, in New York sports. The Jets falling in kind of a heartbreaker to the Bills in overtime. The Giants getting thrashed, really, by probably the best team in football right now, the Saints, maybe behind the Colts. The Colts have played well. They're already at 5-0, and they don't have much of a hard schedule coming up. So they could really run roughshod over that division. In baseball, the Yankees beat themselves once, and they let the Angels beat themselves twice. I don't know if that was a case of just jitters on the Angels' part, but it proves to be a very good game tonight at 8 o'clock here on the East Coast for the Yankees. And another sort of a tidbit baseball news, the Mets have released left-handed pitcher Ken Takahashi. Had an ERA below 3, but that's kind of misleading. Could not pitch to left-handers. He's 40 anyway. Frees up a spot on the 40-man roster as the Mets try to undergo great changes in the off-season. Well, for Evan, I'm Zach, and this is the EZ Connection, only on 89.7 WRUC. And remember, you can tune in to WRUC at wruc.union.edu.